welcome to episode 97 of This Week in Asia. It's a pretty hot week, and there's a lot of things been happening. There's a lot of tech events happening all over the world. In tonight, I still have our own group of regular hosts, but I'm going to start off with somebody who just came in from Sunnyvale. Hi, Smitty.
Yo.
How have you been?
What's up? I'm okay. I'm here at the same time you guys are.
Yeah, you've been away for a couple of weeks in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, I was there for a while in Santa Monica.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but so, I'm here for a couple of weeks. Yes.
And then you're going to head off again and jet setting all over the world?
I don't know right now, actually. I'm here for a bit. Maybe 2 weeks, I think.
Mm. So what have you been up to? You've been to the startup weekend recently, right? And also Tech
Ventures. I did, yeah. We should probably cover that as part of the thing. I hung out there. Yeah, I was at Tech Ventures. I was at the Founders Drinks, and I was at Startup Weekend.
Okay, so we're going to hear from you later about that.
Yeah, we can recap. Yep.
Right. So up in the north and the KL, we have Dennis Aventis.
Yo, hi.
What have you been up to? Heard that Silicon Valley comes to KL, right?
Yeah, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on in KL. Well, the Muhammad Yunus is supposed to be in town. I've no idea. Muhammad Yunus of the Nobel Peace Prize, Grameen Bank fellow. So if he's in town, we might be meeting him tomorrow. Then there's a bunch of people like Jarek Karim, the co-founder of YouTube. We have Paul Bregel, partner in IO Ventures. Rebecca Huang, one of the CEO of YouNoodle. I mean, there's a whole bunch of people from the founder of LinkedIn. They are all in KL tomorrow, so it's going to be a crazy week, actually.
Right. So I understand that you have just covered an earlier episode with Paul Bregel, right?
Yeah, so I met Paul last year in San Francisco, and Paul essentially started this incubator / cafe place, which I have to confess, I'm actually in the Starbucks now, that's why you hear some noise.
Can you order me a coffee?
No, we should do this in IO Ventures, actually. It's a fantastic place one of these days. Right. Yeah.
Okay. So I guess tonight is a little bit much more interesting. We have two guests, one from Hong Kong and one from Australia. I'll start from the guest from Hong Kong, Jonathan. Hi.
Howdy.
Okay. So we have Jonathan Buford, who is joining us from Hong Kong. Jonathan, why don't you tell us about our audience, who you are and what do you do?
So I'm a founder of the Startups HK, which is the active startup community in Hong Kong. I'm also a founder for Boot HK, which is the first tech co-work space here. And I've got my own startup, Makeable.com, which is crowdfunding for product-based ideas.
Oh.
I'm a pretty busy guy.
Right. So what got you into starting up something like Startup HK and all these initiatives? Is it because there's a lot of people who wants to sort of get into the tech space and you're just creating, facilitate this particular ecosystem for them?
Where it started was actually a couple of years ago, is a venture capital forum. Dave McClure was in town. And we just saw that there's a lot of people that were in this space, but nobody's connected. And we actually asked Dave, if we wanted to create a community, where do we start? And he said, start meeting up in a coffee shop. And so that's how we got started with the community. And he's coming back into town this weekend, and
yep,
we'll show him what kind of community formed up.
Yeah, I'll be there. So I'm actually looking forward to meet you guys, actually.
Right. That's for the geeks on the plane, right?
Yep.
So I guess this is probably the one of the other exciting things that's been ongoing for the next 10 to 15 days that Geeks on the Plane is going on. But I have one more guest who I actually met, I think, earlier this year. That's Cameron Riley from Australia. Hi, Cameron. How are you?
G'day, boys. I'm well. Thank you. May I say it's such an honor to be on the number one rated podcast in Asia.
Wow. We are very honored to hear that. But Cameron, why don't you tell our guests, our audience, what do you do? I know you run something, a podcast network, and you have a very, very interesting sort of business model, and you sustain it, and you have a very interesting stories to tell us.
Well, yeah, thank you, mate. I've been in podcasting business since late 2004. I actually started the first podcast in Australia back in November 2004. And a few months later started the Podcast Network, which was the first podcast network at all, the first podcasting business, as far as I know, worldwide. And we ran that until we completely ran out of money a few years later. And since then, I've been building other businesses to help fund the podcast business. So the main one these days is I have a cigar import and online retail business. And just today we launched the latest chapter of that. We've now got the rights to sell this particular brand of cigars into Asia. So it's an online retailer called PerdomoCigarsAsia.com, which is, you know, sort of my business model's a little bit different from most of the startups. I decided to build some real bricks and mortar businesses and use the revenue from those to fund the online media business. So that's what we're doing.
Mm. So is the new cigars that you're brought in Cuban?
No, they're cigars. Better than Cuban.
Really?
Better than Cuban.
Where are
you from? Cuba. These are grown and manufactured in Nicaragua in a place called Esteli. It's up on the border of Nicaragua and Honduras. And most of the cigar aficionados out there realize that Cuban cigars peaked in terms of quality sort of 20, 30 years ago. And these days, most of the best cigars actually come out of other places in Central America.
So just before we turn to our first story of the day, So Cameron, what's in your podcast network that you created? So what current podcast are you currently running from Australia? I mean, yeah, I know you're running some very interesting podcasts that you might want to share with our audience here.
Well, the main show that I produce is called the No Illusions Podcast. We do that sort of weekly, sometimes with guests, sometimes with myself, and it looks at politics, social issues. There's also the Cranky Middle Manager show we currently produce out of Chicago, which is a business-related show. There's a range. The Napoleon podcast is one of the most popular ones on the network these days. It's one I've been doing for 5 or 6 years with the president of the International Napoleonic Society about European history. There's a range of different things that we do.
Okay, just in case all of you didn't know, I'm the host here, Bernard Leung, today to take charge of what are the interesting stories that's predominating, hitting all of Asia Pacific. So we're going to start with the first story, actually, Cameron, that's related to you. So we hear that Samsung is trying to block iPhone 4S sales in Australia. So that's probably interesting because this story, Apple has actually blocked Samsung from selling their Galaxy S in two countries, Germany and Australia. So what is this? How does this what do you think? Do you have an iPhone or do you have an Android phone?
No, I'm an Apple boy. My iPhone 4S has been on order for about 4 months. And, well, that's with the telco. We told the telco about 4 months ago, whatever the next iPhone is, get us some as soon as they come out. So hasn't arrived yet, though. And if Samsung managed to block my delivery, which I'm expecting in the next 24 to 48 hours, I'm going to be extremely annoyed. Yeah, so this goes back to, as you mentioned, Apple originally took Samsung to court here in Australia back in August, claiming that the Galaxy Tab 10.1 model that they were coming out with infringed on patents that Apple used for the iPad. And Samsung actually lost in court. The federal court in Australia agreed with them. And I think the US court agreed not too long after. And so Samsung's in a fairly nasty position. And they obviously feel that the best form of defense is offense. So now they're counter-suing Apple with an injunction that was filed today saying that the iPhone 4S violates wireless patents that they claim they hold. So it's turning into a nasty patent shit fight. Who loses? The customers, which
right.
is unfortunately
so,
how it always breaks down.
But, I mean, Apple definitely has already a very good case because they managed to ban the Samsung Galaxy from selling in Australia. So What do you think that Samsung's chances of trying to stop them from actually selling it in Australia then?
Well, you know, I'm not a lawyer and I haven't read through the detail of what the wireless patents are that Samsung claimed they hold, but I'm sure that the legal process here will be fairly stringent, and it may be a case where pending an analysis of these patents by the federal court, the phones do get held for a while. We'll have to see what happens. But as I said, as long as I get my phone, I don't really care.
I think, did you see, I think they showed one tidbit I read, which is in one of the court things, they held up the iPad and the similar looking thing back in the courtroom, and the Samsung guys picked the wrong one. When they said pick the Samsung one, they actually picked the Apple one, right?
Yeah, essentially the judge actually held up the Samsung Tab 10.1 inch and the iPad 2, and the lawyer from Samsung just told the judge that I can't tell them apart from 15 feet away.
Oh my gosh, that's quite classic.
Well, but so, what about the using the movie proof tablets from movies back in the 60s and 70s saying the form factor is not that different in any way?
You know, sometimes I think that the iPhone looks like, you know, that pet thing that people used to hold in Star Trek, The Next Generation. I wonder how many geeks here agree with me on that.
Well, of course, as is fairly well known, I'm sure you guys have seen the blog post, you can take a lot of Apple's designs that have come out post-1997, things that Jonathan Ive has perfected, and you can trace them back to the design work that came out of Braun in the 60s. So, you know, there's inspiration. There's a line, though, between inspiration and a flat-out rip-off.
Right.
The tricky thing with Samsung, in my opinion, is they kind of like want to make a lot of money by selling to Apple, but they also want to like compete with Apple. And I think the reason Apple's deciding to make a point of this one versus other things is what they're saying is, hey, are you going to be our component supplier making kajillions of dollars, or are you also going to be our competitor? And if you're also going to be our competitor, you got to toe the line, right? And there's a feeling that there's not a very good Chinese wall there between the components and the actual manufacturing. And I think that's why they're making an issue out of this.
Well, you need to understand in terms of Samsung itself, it's a very big company supported by the Korean government initially during the 80s. They are in manufacturing to device, to actually construction, to cars, to you name it, they are in it. So it's really hard for them. I think in terms of top management, it's very hard to, there are probably different management for supply chain to the mobile phone part.
Just to add one thing, the Samsung CEO was actually attending Steve Jobs' memorial service today, and he was actually being asked the same question, and I just got wind of the news was that he said that, you know, they're still in negotiations, and one of the rumors is that the guy was attending the funeral service, part of the thing was actually to try to negotiate this whole patent issues, ongoing dispute between Samsung and Apple. So, you know, things might not be that. You might get, you'll still get your iPhone 4S anyway, Cameron, you know? Yeah.
That's the important thing, man. I'm always looking out for number one, you know that.
So what about Jonathan in Hong Kong? It's coming out soon, right? In
the 4S, people are already picking them up. We have the gray markets. So things move much, much quicker here in certain ways. We already had somebody pick up, I think it was about 80 phones for their boss and take them back to China and try to explain, you know, why they needed 80 phones to cross the border. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Then what about Smitty? Have you brought back any 4S phones that we can touch?
They were not on sale when I was there. Actually, I had just a funny story to this. I was actually over at Box.net having a meeting with them. Saw the CEO of Box.net and then had a meeting and was waiting outside on the day that Steve Jobs died. So I was down in Palo Alto, and then I went to the Apple store, and, you know, they'd already were building the shrines and everything, but the phones weren't on sale until the following Friday. So I had already flew back, but I did manage to pick up a MacBook Air just because I wanted to have something on that Memorial Day. So, but the phones weren't out yet, so I didn't have a chance to get them.
Of course, this patent dispute, has been going on for, you know, at least a year, I think, maybe even 18 months. I know that I read a while ago that Steve Jobs tried to settle the patent dispute with Samsung, I think, you know, at least a year ago while he was still CEO. So this isn't a new thing. They've had several cracks at sorting it out. Let's hope that they do it without affecting customers.
Right. I guess I would like to switch the story around, and I guess because we are having so much Apple stories these days going on. So the second story of the day was
This is not the Apple podcast in Asia?
Yeah, we might create a Mac Break Weekly Asia next, okay?
All right, let's do that.
Well, anyway, let's talk about other news out there. So I have one news about Lenovo eclipsing Dell to become the number two in global PC market. So that came from TechNote, which is our friend Gang Lu, who's manning the show. I think he's now busy with TechCrunch Disrupt. Recently, I've conversed with him over that.
Yep.
So it says that the Chinese PC maker Lenovo has now overtook Dell to become the number two PC maker for the first time, and now the market share is about 13.5%, based on what Gartner. Yeah, right. And HP is, we are not sure whether they are still number one or not, but that's what the numbers are. So I guess this is very, I guess let me take this discussion a little bit further. I mean, there's this whole, you know, Steve Jobs before he passed away, he actually came, this is the post-PC era, you know, post-PC era meaning that people don't need desktops anymore and etc. So what do you see, where is there still a market for actually PC, personal computers, desktops in the world? I mean, given that Lenovo and Dell are still fighting out over all whether who is number one with HP? Anyone?
I think you still need a laptop.
But it still matters.
Yeah. Smitty, you go ahead.
No, I think it still matters, but I think it's also just showing you that it's going to be a limited amount of players that are actually going to do well here, right? And it's obviously that the Asian manufacturers have been able to get an edge up. I mean, I think Dell's been blowing it for a while, so I don't know if they're a good sign. What I'm curious to know is HP still going to bail on their commitment to getting out of the PC business, or are they still going to see an edge in it? But you know, I think for me, this thing is interesting from a Microsoft perspective, because what this really means is there's not a lot of money in being a maker of Microsoft PCs. And to me, that should scare Microsoft, because do they really want to be known for just having a bunch of manufacturers slog it out for a bunch of crap? Because that's essentially what a lot of it's become. To me, that kind of points to the shift in Microsoft not really keeping up with kind of user demands and what's happening in the industry, more so than just the manufacturers. You frankly don't have much to work with when they look at what you do with Windows, right? So to me, that's the more telling, like, problem, you know? Like, so if you're Microsoft, you're essentially saying, hey guys, log it out for a few bucks there, hope it goes well, and you know, that's the state of the PC biz. And that's a pretty big fall from where they were, right?
Right, but there's still a big enterprise market to that Microsoft serves, right? Smitty?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think that's kind of what they've done. They've moved it into that stack, but it's left, you know, the consumer stack. You know, when I go and look at Funan when they have one of these fairs, and I kind of cruise around on the where they look at all the different laptops, and there's just no difference between them. I don't even know how you would decide how to pick one. It's like, well, this one comes with a free mouse and this one comes with a free bag. You're like, the essence of any sort of differentiation is kind of gone, right? So, you know, I can imagine why this has happened to the vendors, but if I were Microsoft, I would look at this and wonder, like, if this is a good position for them. I mean, because it's not going to lead to the growth of their platform, right?
Sorry, Cameron, you were saying just now?
Oh, I was just going to say, as somebody who worked for Microsoft for nearly 10 years, you know, the forecast of Microsoft demise come around with regularity. And even though I totally agree with everything you're saying, you know, Microsoft responds well when its back's against the wall. Obviously, it does look like from the numbers that the PC sales are starting to decline, or growth is declining anyway. I don't think we can say PC sales are declining. Growth was up by, I think, 3.2% from Q3 in 2010 to Q3 2011. But, you know, maybe Microsoft will use this to get some wind under its sails and start to innovate again like they did once upon a time of yore. I have to ask you guys, though, I mean, has either of you tried to...
I definitely wasn't saying this sells demise for Microsoft. I was just saying that as a vendor, I don't think you want that. Nobody wants to be in the business of selling your desktop because, one, they don't make a lot of money on it, and two, they can't differentiate. So I think it doesn't bode well for them, but I don't think it's hurt them. I think it's hurt the Dells and the HPs and people like that, right?
Yeah, so I totally agree. Yeah, have any of you tried to live on a tablet or, let's say, an iPad, even though this isn't the Apple show, for an extended period of time yet?
Yeah, I have tried that. I mean, it's not exactly... I can't. There's still a lot of stuff that I want to do that I can't do. John, what do you think?
Yeah, no, that was actually a point that I was going to bring up, is I wonder how much... you know, how much cannibalization is coming from tablets and smartphones, especially in developing markets where you would expect to see growth in PCs. You know, they will live off of a tablet. You know, look in China, you know, with really cheap Android tablets available. You know, that does everything that a PC would do for them.
Right. Well, I was in the U.S. For about a month from sort of the middle of July to the middle of August. And this time, the first time ever, I didn't take my MacBook. I just took my iPad 2 and sort of trained myself for a couple of weeks prior to the trip to make sure that I could do everything that I needed to do. And I survived quite well for the month. There was a little bit slow, a little bit clunky, editing video, editing audio, writing longer documents than it would have been on a laptop. But I had to weigh that against much better battery life, much more portability, much less heat, all those sorts of things. So, I mean, I don't think it's quite there yet, but I can easily see that within the next couple of years, if we continue to see progress and innovation in the tablet space that we've seen in the last couple, that there will be a very large part of the market, enterprise and consumer, where people will say, you know what, I really don't need a full laptop anymore. I can get by with a tablet.
Yeah, I think it's definitely possible. I think, you know, I think my problem is the kind of draconian Apple-ish things with trying to grab files or being able to, you know, like you have to do all these crazy Dropbox thing. But there are times that throughout the day, you know, I can just carry around my iPad and I do just fine. So I think it'll get there. And I think there's a huge difference between what Apple's done on the tablets and what Microsoft appears to be headed with Windows 8. And I wonder if it'll make the difference. But, you know, I think the world is leaning less and less towards needing your PC with you all the time, right?
Well, I find that doing email is actually quicker on tablet at this point. I use a Galaxy Tab 8.9 inch, and it's perfect, actually.
Well, I still have difficulties migrating it. I still like to have a laptop, maybe because I'm doing programming-related type of work. So I find it actually hard to use a tablet. I mean, on my side, but that's my side of the story. Maybe for business executives, I'm seeing a lot more transition towards using an iPad as an email device, you know. Yeah, because it's much portable. I think depends on which... What type of usage that you're using the PCs, the laptops, and the tablets. Otherwise, very hard to tell. Well, any last words, gentlemen, of regards to the post-PC thing? Anyone? No. Okay, anyway, no. Let's take a break, and we will come back with much more interesting news about this happening in Singapore, Malaysia, and India.
This is Robert Scoble, and you're listening to This Week in Asia.
Hey, welcome back to This Week in Asia, episode 97. So this is your host today, Bernard Leung here, and I'm actually joined with Dennis Aventis up in KL.
Yup, hello.
Smitty, back in Singapore from work in the US. And we have Jonathan from
holiday,
Hong Kong.
Howdy, guys. Yes.
I wasn't on holiday. Jesus. Yeah.
Okay. And we also have Cameron Riley from Australia. All right. G'day. So now we're going to change a little bit and move to the South Asia side. We're talking about PayPal in India. So PayPal India has now received a limit increase. Actually, this has been something that's been talked about a lot in terms of the e-commerce space, because PayPal has been very limited because most governments in Asia tend to restrict them And if you are a PayPal user in India now, the receiving limit is now 3,000 per transaction, effective immediately, which is a really good thing because it actually prompts up more commerce and it also allow internet services to be able to have better transactions. So round the table, what do you think about this news? Does that mean that maybe there are startup entrepreneurs will find more opportunity in the Indian market or maybe even big corporations as well? Anyone?
Well, but the question I would have is what was being limited before? So it's what, $500 before, and then now it's $3,000. But, you know, specifically what things were being limited by that transaction limit? Because a lot of smaller startups are, you know, microtransactions, you know, $10, $20. So, you know, which part of the market is this targeting?
I think it sort of tries to target sort of the middle class and up market because I guess the microtransactions are still ongoing because I think on average, I think $500 as a transaction limit is pretty high for most part of India. But I guess because there's a growing middle class now and the cities are actually growing much quicker. And of course, there's a lot of internet activity that's going on in India. So the one of the things that might happen is actually to sort of jack up more e-commerce sites. Because if you look into India and you compare China, the lack of payment is the thing that's holding them back, right? There's not enough. There aren't any big, great startups that come from India. You hear a lot from China. You hear about Baidu. You hear about all these guys. Of course, there's a restrictive government that controls everything. But it's sort of, they're starting to at least opening things up to sort of allow more transactions happening through the internet. I mean, why don't I direct the question to Smitty? I mean, from your sort of head looking from, you know, what would the big corporations like Microsoft, you know, all these companies would benefit from this?
I don't know if they will directly. I mean, I guess it's possible down the road, but I don't know if this suddenly just makes a huge difference. I haven't heard anybody talking about it too much, so I was surprised when you brought this up. But we'll see what happens.
Right. I mean, we can compare this to Indonesia, right? In Southeast Asia, the problem for Southeast Asia is mainly in the payment problem, right?
Yeah,
we can't
exactly
make transactions.
So in terms of Indonesia, most of them actually do bank transfer, and PayPal only came to Malaysia probably about a year plus ago, and in terms of it's actually restricted by government. But what I really like to see in for this is actually a plus in terms of the outsourcing industry in India, especially you can actually push more jobs to India in terms of outsourcing and you can do more payments from PayPal.
Yeah, it's definitely gonna enable, like, you know, people who are doing things where they need to bring money in to do it. I don't know if that affects the big companies that much. I think it opens up for smaller things to happen. But, you know, like what I found is, like, if you take the Indonesia example, a lot of times because people can't, like, they want credit cards instead of just banks when you hook your account to it. So, you know, this doesn't change some of those things. It just allows a bigger amount of money to come in. But, you know, I don't know if that changes, you know, what's being sold per se, because then you still have the, you know, what can you import, what can you export, things like that. But it'll be interesting to see if it does affect people.
Do you think it will revolutionize the remittance market in India, which is actually huge in terms of people sending money back to India?
Well, one theory that I've heard about PayPal is that it allows for people to have a bank account that it's kind of floating out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, so that would be one question is, you know, is this going to enable more of that in that respect?
Well, for a good comparison, for small businesses in Singapore that is using PayPal, the transaction limit per day is $7,000 Singapore dollars, which is about somewhere between $5,000 to $6,000 per se. Part of the reason why this limit that most government impose is the fear of money laundering. So I guess the question is that I guess that's partially why PayPal is so restricted in this part of the world. But I'm not sure whether... what about the Aussie market then, Cameron?
Yeah, I was just...
Yeah.
I was just trying to look that up so I could give it as a reference. Yeah, I think that you're right in saying that money laundering is one of the issues that they face. I've never been pushed to a limit with PayPal. In fact, PayPal have stopped all of my accounts. Have you ever tried to talk to customer support at PayPal?
It's terrible.
I've been at PayPal ever since they first came out. But about 4 or 5 months ago, I got an email from PayPal saying, oh, there's a problem with your account. You need to provide some paperwork. And I have no idea what they're talking about. So I sent them emails going, sorry, I have no idea what you're talking about. Nothing. And I just keep getting emails from them once a month saying, hey, your account's still on hold. We haven't got that paperwork from you yet. And I keep going back to them saying, what bloody paperwork are you talking about? Nothing. Anyway, so that's frustrating. But sorry, I'm just ranting now. I have no idea what the limit is, but you keep talking and I'll find out for you.
No, I think the problem is that, in Singapore, we are a little bit luckier. They actually put onto the website as in what type of paperwork I need to do for the first business transaction, and then after when I hit the 7K limit, where do I go and ask for indemnity or sort of allow me to apply for a higher transaction limit. Basically, I just have to go to the sort of the Monetary Authority of Singapore, which is sort of our financial regulation authority. So I don't know, maybe they need your paperwork to get to the government or something like that.
Yeah, it's essentially PayPal is a whole mess because there's so many government regulation that you actually need to go and negotiate through. And we use PayPal for our events sometimes, and that I think I would rather accept Bitcoin to go through all those mess actually.
Yeah, actually, for Startup Saturday, we ended up having to take out the PayPal payment option because we had 450 people attempt to sign up, and we only had about 50 people successfully go through it. Some of that was error due to them changing the API, not documenting it. But the other was just pushback from not wanting to use PayPal.
Yeah, I guess that pretty much sums up the state of PayPal in this part of the world. I probably would not hope that it would be the same for some of the new payment services coming out from the US, like the NFCs, the Google Wallets, and the Square. So I sort of want to move next now to Southeast Asia. So I understand from Daniel that Malaysia and Indonesia are now joining funds for technology startups.
Yeah, essentially, if the backstory is Malaysia and Indonesia are usually at war. There's a lot of hostility, especially the past couple of years, in terms of Indonesia accusing Malaysia of stealing their culture, Malaysia accusing Indonesia of stealing their culture, and I run several communities that are sort of have the name Malaysia.
Well, that is the truth, though, right? I mean,
well, it's not the truth because the thing is,
I'm kidding.
this is the the Indonesia Malaya archipelago, and the cultures actually they are quite similar in terms of, even if you look at people from the Philippines, they have similar words and similar pronunciation and similar types of food they eat. So it is very interesting to actually look that recently they signed an MOU to do joint investment between Malaysia and Indonesia for technology startups.
You know what? They have a common enemy.
So who's that? Is it a little tiny island down
the little red dot? Oops, sorry. Did I just say anything?
Yeah, I don't know. I think this is actually, I don't understand why the Indonesian will actually want to do this, but in terms of the Malaysian market, we are always looking into tapping the 300 million people in Indonesia, and that is something that we are trying to look at. So this is essentially a collaboration between the MTDC, which is the Malaysia Technology Development Corporation, and the Indonesian Investment Agency, which is actually witnessed by our Prime Minister. So I wonder how long has this thing, and will it actually last, and what sort of investment that will actually come through from this kind of thing. And in fact, I understand within the past couple of months, there's been a lot of trade mission from technology entrepreneurs to Indonesia.
So they're all going to the Indonesia wave is coming back up again, I guess. Yeah. But more within the local money itself. Yeah, so Smitty, what do you think?
I don't think I should comment on these.
Right. Well, I don't know, because there's a lot. I mean, maybe I should open the question to the floor, to the other panelists here. So, what do you think, like, for example, sort of governments joining up as technology startup funds? I mean, I don't see that in Hong Kong. I don't see that in Australia. Do you think it's a good idea?
Well, it doesn't necessarily make that much sense in Hong Kong. Because the only joint might be between us and Macau, but, you know, it's a very... very different thing altogether. So it doesn't really flow the same way.
Oh, what about you, Cameron? Do you think that that's a great idea? I mean, in Australia, do they have such initiatives where the government creates their own fund and starts investing?
Well, look, my understanding from the article that I read about the Malaysia-India deal is that by combining the populations of the two countries, you end up with the third largest market in Asia after China and India. And it's certainly one of the things that holds the technology industry back in Australia is the size of our population, you know, 22, 23 million. It's very hard for technology companies and people looking to invest in technology companies in Australia to justify any significant amount of investment with such a small market. So, no, we don't see that sort of thing here, but I would love to see Australia joining forces with other countries in the Asia-Pac region to try and extend the reach of Australian technology companies into the market. I think it's an interesting initiative.
Yeah, I guess that pipes up a little bit of the Southeast Asia scene anyway. So I guess, Indonesia and Malaysia, I guess they combine up would be pretty large market anyway. So yeah, it might be a model.
It's the right thing to try. I was talking to James Chan today, right? And like one of the things that like, you know, I really think the strength of this region would be the region kind of operating as a unit in order to create scale and capabilities that each of these countries in and of themselves, yeah, you can do a startup and you can make it or maybe be something, but not going to be as big as you could be if you were trying to tackle the region and had some infrastructure that helped you to do that, right? Yep. You know, the strength of this region would be that you look at startups holistically trying to like tackle the region, right? And so I think, you know, countries looking to kind of work together is probably the evolution of what that's going to become, which is you try to launch and run things across Southeast Asia. That gives you a pretty big, you know, landing capability to get something done. So I think this is an interesting thing. It'll be interesting to see if more of this happens or if groups in Singapore try to take a leadership role and pull some of that together. Because I think it's going to take that regional capability to make this really interesting.
You know, the challenge about this is also in terms of, like, look at US or look at Indonesia alone, there's a big homogeneous market. So it's actually easier to actually design a startup that will come from this particular region. There's no problem within China. There's no problem with Japan or even Korea or Brazil. So this is going to be a bit challenged in terms of you need to look to what James proposed, and you need to look at a multiple angle where you need to cover the Malaysian market, the Indonesian market, the Philippine market, Thailand, Denmark, etc., which all you need specific localization. So I'm a bit skeptical about this point anyway.
Well, I guess that we have to wait and see for what is ongoing. So I'm probably have run out with all the stories, but there's a lot of events happening this last week and this week. So let me just sort of go around the table. There is the Tech Venture event that happened last week. There were a lot of luminaries. Tim Draper from Draper Fisher Universum was here. Nick Yang, who is the sort of the founder of Kongzhong Corporation from China, who says he's going to start investing in Southeast Asia, was here. Apparently, he was the classmate to Sergey and Larry in Stanford, and a couple of other luminaries who were in town. So, Smitty, you were there for the pitching. What do you think about the event?
The TechVenture one?
Yep, you were making a lot of commentaries about all the startups, basically.
Yeah. So it was, you know, it was interesting. I didn't see something that I was bowled over by. I saw a couple of interesting things. I mean, there was a lot of things that appeared to be old, but they made it into a pitching session. There was a lot of heart medical stuff and even industrial things. So it wasn't, you know, a lot of just computer things. I thought the event was good. I enjoyed some of the talks. I really enjoyed Tim Draper. I think he's just an awesome speaker and probably the top one there as far as being able to hold an audience and have, you know, an interesting, relevant message. He was my favorite by far. You know, there were a few things that, you know, looked like they could have been interesting. One of them was the dental one, and there was a bio one for creating, you know, not reusable, but kind of a componentized test kit thing where you take your blood sample, it's chip, you know, logic on a chip, and then the machine can do many different kinds. That was interesting. So, you know, this is the second time I've seen this event, and it becomes kind of more medical slash bio than it does computers as time goes on, which I guess is okay. I mean, that's not
so
that's a business as well, right?
Right. So the event that went on after that is the sort of the night Founders Drinks with Tim Draper, then followed by Startup Weekend over in Singapore. So
Well,
you were there, right, for Smitty? I'm basically just enjoying chilling up because it was my birthday over the weekend. So what happened, you know?
Oh, you did plug that. Okay, sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, he did have to plug that, and I had my birthday too, just so I can fight fire with fire there.
That's not what I intended.
Hey, my birthday was October 10th. We're all liberals.
Hey, mine's the 8th. Wow, we're getting all around each other.
Yeah, so we can call this episode October Babies or something like that.
Birthday episode. the Founders Drinks, I wouldn't say was a killer event, other than the fact that Tim Draper showed up. He gave a talk, talked a little bit about his interactions with Steve Jobs, which I thought was very cool. And he was very available. Like, you could just come up and chat with him, which I thought was super cool. So he's basically saying it's a great time to be doing things. He thinks Singapore is a great hub for things. But he was also talking about that, you know, just to keep getting focused on the fact that the market has a lot of opportunity, and even made an interesting point that with Steve Jobs being gone, how the mobile market kind of in some sense has a big gap to fill, and he thinks it's really going to change the ecosystem. So his thing was, you know, that it's a good time to be doing things, and don't let the economy and the politics get in the way of opportunities. And I thought that was the good takeaway from it.
Wow, that's such a good
question. So that was Founders Drinks, and then I went to Startup Weekend Singapore. I mostly just went to the pitch sessions and, you know, a lot of activity. I didn't see anything really stunningly amazing. Saw a lot of little copycat things, a couple interesting things like Tribe, Slider. But, you know, it was a good event. It was well organized and there was a pretty good vibe. So that appears to be, you know, building as a nice event.
So that's good. So I think this week is a lot of new events coming up. So one of them is Silicon Valley Goes to Malaysia.
Comes to Malaysia.
So it's actually, there's a similar one called Silicon Valley Comes to Cambridge as well.
Well, it's essentially modeled after that. Silicon Valley comes to Cambridge, and there will be 15 entrepreneurs coming over. So the event is actually happening on the 20th and the 21st of October, and there'll be about 800 over 1,000 over startup entrepreneurs, and essentially it's a free event supported by the government. So it's also kind of like, I mean, in my opinion, it's also kind of like a pre-election promotion, like, hey, look, government is doing something kind of thing.
Okay. Well, anyway, the much more interesting event this week, and Jonathan can also join in. Geeks on the Plane is happening.
Yay! Yep. I'm going to get my Geeks on the Plane license. I'm going to start a pirate crew.
Yeah, so we hijacked Geeks on a Plane to come to Hong Kong. They originally weren't planning on it, but, you know, we got them to come down, and we've got Dave McClure, you know, doing his thing, and then we've got
Edith Young. She's the founder of day, fantastic entrepreneur. I mean, she's probably one of the most connected person you know in the valley.
She's the one that helped us hijack the plane.
Okay, so they hijacked the plane and I heard that they might be going to Shenzhen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think some of the people are going to Shenzhen. They're in China just touring around in different places.
I was reading a very interesting post in TechNote about Dave McClure versus Lei Jun, who's the sort of super angel equivalent in China, and he's also the co-founder of a tablet device called Xiaomi.com, I think. Yeah, so there was a pretty good, interesting banter. You can actually read a lot about the debate in the most recent blog post of Techno. It's a pretty long post as such. So one more event that I would like to ask if anyone is going, because I'll be going to that one, TechCrunch Disrupt Beijing. Anyone?
Oh, sorry. What?
Yeah, I think I've decided not to go for Makeable. Yeah.
Well, I'm just going there to catch up with old friends like Gang from TechNode, basically. Yeah. How about you, Daniel? Are you going?
No, actually, you missed out another event. Before that, there's going to be Asia D.
Oh, yes, Asia D. But they don't have a lot of Asia speakers.
They don't have a lot of Asia speakers, but they're going to try to... it's sort of like a Silicon Valley goes to Hong Kong kind of thing. And I think Google and Samsung are going to do their announcement of their next Nexus Prime / ice cream sandwich kind of thing.
Yeah, it's, at least they've got something scheduled right before the conference.
So I'm not going for TechCrunch Disrupt Beijing, but I know it's going to be really awesome. And in fact, Sarah Lacey is going to go to Beijing in the middle of her maternity leave.
Right. Well, we all know anyway.
Yeah. Yep.
So, so I think it's probably time to round up. So I'm going to start off with Cameron. Sorry, we have so much events to tie up over in the Asia side. So where do we find you, basically?
I was just going to say, I'm having an event at my cigar lounge every day from about 3 o'clock in the afternoon where I sit around and drink single malt whiskies and smoke cigars. So if any of you are ever in Brisbane, you're more than welcome to pay us a visit.
Sounds like a tough life.
Awesome.
Yeah, I know. It's so terrible. I want to go there now. What kind of whiskey, by the way?
Oh, at the moment it's Laphroaig, a little bit of Col-Ela from Isla. A lot of Isla whiskeys we tend to like here.
Okay.
Do you have Oban? Just a curious question, Cameron. Have you drank Oban as well?
Yes, Oban. I have had Oban. Yes, yeah, lovely drop.
Yeah, that's one of my favorite whiskies, actually.
My current favorite is Laphroaig. I have a couple of bottles of Laphroaig in KL.
Okay, yeah. So we know who to talk to when we are in KL.
Okay.
I love Oban.
Well, Cameron, it's good Oban. To always have you on. And you got to come on again this summer and tell us more about your whiskey and cigar collection. Probably.
Thank you, guys. And anyone listening to this in Asia is interested in trying fine cigars, check out our new startup, PerdomoCigarsAsia.com. Now shipping everywhere in Asia.
That's a good line. That's a good plan. Yeah.
Yep. Plug.
Yeah. Anyway, so Jonathan, where can we find you then?
You can always find me on Twitter. My main thing right now is Makeable, MAKIBLE.com. We're about to launch a new product this week, which is a laser sensor that uses your smartphone to measure up your room. So check that out.
Yeah. So what's the elevator pitch of Makeable? Because I like it a lot, actually.
Well, okay. So Makeable, the idea behind it is, so you've got a crowdfunding platform that is connected up to manufacturing resources. We license the ideas that are successfully funded, so it protects both the inventor and the customer. So the customer gets what they expect, and the inventor is guaranteed their royalties.
So what's the name of the website to go to, Makeable?
Makeable, MAKIBLE.com.
Oh,
sorry,
okay.
Cameron, what was the website that to go actually to look for you?
Oh, thanks for asking. It was Perdomo, PERDOMO, cigarsasia.com.
All right, fantastic.
Cool. And then, Daniel, where do we find you?
As usual, you can bing me at Serentis, so just bring me around. Yeah.
Wow. Okay, how about Smitty? Where are we finding you other than at DreamPipe?
Yeah, at DreamPipe or my blog, nokpis.com, because I don't have cigars or whiskey, but I don't have KPIs either.
Well, but you have good white wine. I remember last time we were drinking white wine at your place.
You also have a fantastic view of something that we should not announce on air.
Yeah, but that would be good for him, because all the Asian girls will be coming and ask me, you know, they send emails, his fan club, you know.
That'll get me to in see trouble.
Okay, anyway, this is Bernard Leong. You can find us in this at Twitter, This Week in Asia, or you can come to www.thisweekinasia.net and also our Facebook page, This Week in Asia. So, well, this is us, all of us, signing off, and thank you very much for coming on the show. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye, guys.
Cheers.
Later.
You're unbelievable.